Indescribable onslaught, an indescribable violence, and it's an important moment in our history to remember that workers do have the power to shape the world. Workers do have the power to influence, kind of what happens not only locally, but to influence processes of colonial violence and dispossession on a bigger scale.
That was Ria Alsana, a Palestinian researcher and organizer with Workers in Palestine Initiative. And this is Julia Banan of the UAW.
As a UAW member and as the president of my local, UAW must use its political power to put teeth into their call for a ceasefire. UAW must revoke endorsements of these politicians if they want to make good on their call for a ceasefire.
Special thanks to Hannah Elias, Charina Nadura, and Messiah Rhodes. Those voices from the Foley Square rally on May Day. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warnoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Postmodernism, a reaction against the ideas and values of modernism. Avant-garde, new, unusual, and experimental ideas. KBOO, a community radio station that supports both. Join us in our mission to push the status quo by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give between now and May 25th to donate and help us reach our $60,000 spring membership drive goal.
KBOO's board is recruiting directors. In preparation for our annual board election in September, KBOO's nominating committee will be holding virtual information sessions from now through June. KBOO's Board of Directors guides the station's strategic plan and represents the interests and visions of all of our members. BIPOC persons are especially encouraged to apply. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/board recruiting. Thank you for considering board work at KBOO.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, police make arrests in Gaza protests at campuses in our community and across the country. President Biden makes an appeal, saying there's a difference between peaceful protest and unlawful violence. And how to avoid chemicals that are showing up in our water and environment and are linked to many health problems. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. KBOO is currently in our spring membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. The occupation of Portland State University's library by pro-Palestinian protesters was broken up by Portland police this morning. The entire PSU campus is closed for a third day. Several dozen protesters fled the library just before 9 a.m. 12 have been arrested, with 4 identified as PSU students. People could hear the sounds of a warning from Portland police around the park blocks in the downtown Portland area before the arrests. A group of 50 or so demonstrators tried to block police from leaving the area with protesters they arrested. Portland police began clearing the library around 6 a.m., dismantling barricades students had made from furniture in the library. On X, cops posted that they were armed with 40-millimeter less lethal launchers that they used for crowd control. They appeared to bring tear gas with them, but say they didn't use it in the library. On Tuesday, negotiators offered students a deal whereby they would face no criminal charges for leaving the library. Protesters inside the library posted on Instagram saying, quote, PSU President Ann Cudd and faculty gave false hope in regards to negotiations, only to flip at the last second. We had agreed to walk out of the library tonight, to which we were continuously given false hope for. End of quote. Protesters say their demands include that the university cut ties with any company or organization that has business interests in Israel, and that PSU's administration calls for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. Pro-Palestinian protests continue at colleges and other sites around the nation. Around 300 protesters were arrested in New York, including at Columbia University, where students had occupied Hamilton Hall. The university said in a statement, quote, the decision to reach out to the NYPD was in response to the actions of the protesters, not the cause they are championing. Columbia's president said efforts to reach a compromise with protest organizers had failed and that the institution would not bow to demands to divest from Israel. At UCLA on Tuesday night, counter-demonstrators violently attacked a pro-Palestinian protest encampment. That fight started around midnight. Police were called around 12:40, arrived around 1:40, but took no action until around 3 a.m., There were no visible arrests, and it's unclear how many people were injured. UCLA moved classes online for Wednesday and Thursday. Vice Chancellor Mary Isacco said, quote, horrific acts of violence occurred at the encampment tonight, and we immediately called law enforcement for mutual aid support. We are sickened by this senseless violence, and it must end. End of quote. For an in-depth look at the campus protests at San Francisco State University and about half dozen campuses in California, here's Suzanne Potter.
Massive protests and tent encampments opposing the war in Gaza are growing at universities across California, with classes canceled at UCLA on Wednesday after tensions boiled over into violence there. In addition, police arrested 25 students at Cal Poly Humboldt on Tuesday. An organizer named Rithik from the Students for Gaza encampment at San Francisco State University recently spoke to Sonali Kohatkar for her TV and radio show, Yes Presents, Rising Up with Sonali.
Students everywhere are appalled at the current genocide occurring in Gaza that is being perpetrated by Israel and backed by the United States. You know, we understand that our taxpayer money is not going towards our own education, but rather to fund this genocide and wars of aggression across the world.
At SFSU, students are demanding that the CSU system divest any holdings in companies that sell arms to Israel, that the student protesters not be sanctioned by the school, and that the university president should make a statement opposing Israeli occupation of Palestinian land and declare the war a genocide. Pro-Israel groups argue that the war is justified given the massacre perpetrated by Hamas that kicked off the violence. They also worry that Jewish students will feel intimidated on campus. However, a Jewish student named Jacob at San Francisco State says that is not his experience.
I don't think we've ever felt that any of the actions being taken in the name of anti-Zionism and anti-colonialism are anti-Semitic. Never felt unsafe, never felt unwelcome in these spaces. You know, anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism.
SFSU President Lynn Mahoney has emphasized the university's support for peaceful protest and says the university has already taken steps to divest. I'm Suzanne Potter.
President Biden spoke to the nation about the college protests.
We've all seen images, and they put to the test two fundamental American principles. Excuse me. The first is the right to free speech and for people to peacefully assemble and make their voices heard. The second is the rule of law. Both must be upheld. We are not an authoritarian nation where we silence people or squash dissent. The American people are heard. In fact, peaceful protest is in the best tradition of how Americans respond to consequential issues. But, neither are we a lawless country. We are a civil society, and order must prevail. Throughout our history, we've often faced moments like this because we are a big, diverse, free-thinking and freedom-loving nation. In moments like this, there are always those who rush in to score political points. But this isn't a moment for politics. It's a moment for clarity. So let me be clear. Peaceful protest in America. Violent protest is not protected. Peaceful protest is. It's against the law when violence occurs. Destroying property is not a peaceful protest. It's against the law. Vandalism, trespassing, breaking windows, shutting down campuses, forcing the cancellation of classes and graduations. None of this is a peaceful protest. Threatening people, intimidating people, instilling fear in people is not peaceful protest. It's against the law. Dissent is essential to democracy, but dissent must never lead to disorder or to denying the rights of others so students can finish the semester and their college education.
And as those campus Gaza protests continue, an Arab American mayor says voters are watching. The Arizona Senate votes to repeal the state's 1864 abortion ban, and a Pennsylvania voting rights advocate says dispelling misinformation is a full-time job. With more in the stories impacting our democracy, here's today's edition of 2024 Talks.
Protesting against the idea that their tuition dollars, that our U.S. taxpayer dollars, are being used to fund the ongoing genocide that has now killed over 35,000 Palestinians, half of which are children.
Dearborn Mayor Abdullah Hamoud says the Biden administration has failed to take enough action to slow genocide in Gaza, and that'll sway voters. Hundreds more pro-Palestinian university students were arrested yesterday. UCLA canceled classes after 15 were injured in clashes between protesters and counter-protesters. Republican lawmakers sparred with students at a George Washington University protest encampment. Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert threatened to withdraw federal funding if faculty didn't act against them.
I had people proudly saying that they are faculty and not wanting to remove a Palestinian sign from the George Washington statue. If they don't want to do something to address this, well then kiss your federal funding goodbye.
Hard right Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene is confirming she intends to force a vote to oust Speaker Mike Johnson next week. That's likely to fail thanks to unusual support from across the aisle. Greene furiously attacked that as a big, wet, sloppy Democrat kiss for Johnson. Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says they're just avoiding more chaos.
House Republicans are either unwilling or unable to get Marjorie Taylor Greene and the extreme MAGA Republicans under control. And so it's going to take a bipartisan coalition and partnership to accomplish that objective.
Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs says she'll sign a repeal of Arizona's Civil War era abortion law, leaving the state with a 15-week ban. The repeal might help Republicans move past an issue Democrats have been campaigning on for months. Vice President Kamala Harris is traveling around the country, arguing that overturning Roe v. Wade was the start of taking away women's rights and freedom.
And we all must understand who is to blame. Former President Donald Trump did this. And now Trump wants us to believe he will not sign a national ban.
A conspiracy theory posted last month falsely claimed that Social Security data showed 500,000 migrants registering to vote without a photo ID in Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Texas. Candida Kenner with the New Pennsylvania Project says lies like this are being pushed by bad actors who want voter suppression.
The struggle continues for civil rights, for voting rights, for human rights here in America and across the country.
Finally, new data from the Utah Foundation says government dysfunction is a pressing issue there. Republican State Representative Robert Spendlove says voters feel ignored by politicians in a climate of government overreach and partisan division. He says they need to get people more engaged.
Do we revisit how people get to the ballot? Do we lower the threshold on signature gathering? Do we have different models of primaries?
I'm Alex Gonzalez.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants to keep separated from church and state.
While right-wing Christians want our country identified with their religion, Israel shows the dangers of a country and religion being so closely linked. Palestinian supporters face the question, can you be anti-Zion and not be anti-Semitic? More people feel yes, but a lot of the powerful say no, whether sincerely or just because Israel gets greater protection if all those of the Jewish faith share Israel's pain. There are strong reasons for the separation of church and state. Trump uses a similar tactic, telling his followers his prosecutions are their persecution, that he's taking his actions for them, as if Trump's lifestyle and wealth are shared by more than 1% of Americans. Given the same clothes, it's difficult to tell an Israeli from a Palestinian, a MAGA supporter from an Antifa. And there's the key to peace, knowing we're all human, sometimes suffering, sometimes celebrating, all wishing the powerful remember their own humanity. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Stroke is one of the top five causes of death in Oregon, according to the CDC. Eric Tegedoff talks to a leader with Stroke Awareness Oregon.
May is Stroke Awareness Month, and health experts stress time is of the essence when responding to this medical condition. The acronym BFAST can help people identify a stroke. B stands for balance, and watching if someone is losing their balance. E stands for eyes and changes to vision. F is for face and signs of it drooping. A is for arms. It's a stroke sign if one arm is drooping when raised. S is for speech, which may be slurred. And T stands for time to call 911 if any of these signs are present. Carol Stiles is head of Stroke Awareness Oregon.
We recommend calling 911 because the medics can come and begin immediately assessing the situation and having the ER prepared to receive the person.
Stiles says acting quickly is important because of clot-busting treatments that can prevent more widespread damage if provided at the hospital within the first 4.5 hours. Stroke was the fifth leading cause of death in Oregon in 2021, according to the latest data from the CDC. Stiles says strokes are most common in older people, but there's been an alarming increase among people ages 18 to 45. High blood pressure is the leading risk factor for stroke, followed by atrial fibrillation. Stiles lists other risk factors as well.
Sleep apnea, obesity, untreated diabetes, lack of exercise or a sedentary lifestyle. All of those factors will contribute to stroke, as they also do, by the way, to heart issues.
Stiles notes her organization provides peer-led recovery support for stroke survivors, their families, and caregivers. On May 13th, Stroke Awareness Oregon is hosting country singer Randy Travis and his wife Mary for a fireside chat and band. Travis suffered a stroke in 2013. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $60,000 by May 25th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for KBOO News In Depth. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio, then at 7, American Indian Airwaves. Tonight's weather, mainly clear skies, down to 45. Tomorrow's weather, cloudy, periods of rain, up to 63. Today in history, on this date, in 1933, we recorded a Loch Ness monster sighting for the very first time, igniting what became a modern legend. Our quote of the day is from Robert Percy. The place to improve the world is first in one's own heart and head and hands. There are chemicals that can cause health problems, and they're everywhere. This week for Health Beat, I talked to the University of Washington's Dr. Jessica Ray.
PFAS are per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. That's the acronym. These are a class of over several thousand synthetic chemicals that were produced as early as the 1900s. They were used in kind of military training operations. So the active ingredient in a foam used as a fire suppressant were these PFAS chemicals that were synthesized. And just as if you had a fire in your house, you would apply a fire extinguisher. When aircraft catch fire at these military training zones, they needed a kind of more heavy-duty version of a fire suppressant. PFAS have been used in many different consumer products, such as shampoos, nail polish, dental floss, the waxy coatings, in food container packages. And they've also been used for water-resistant coatings on outerwear. And they've also been used as both water and oil-resistant coatings in cookware, such as Teflon.
And you fast forward to today, and at least 45% of the nation's tap water is estimated to contain these chemicals. How did it get so prevalent?
Over time, these chemicals are being released into the environment. For example, if you are at home cooking with a Teflon-coated pan, over time, as you wash and clean your pan, that Teflon coating starts to slowly degrade over time, and that PFAS Teflon coating will go to your local wastewater treatment plant. So So we have buildup and accumulation of PFAS over time in the environment. The physical and chemical properties of PFAS are such that they are resistant to chemical degradation, thermal degradation, and biological degradation. So hence the dubbed name forever chemicals. Once they are formed, it takes a lot of energy to break these chemicals down in the environment. So they stick around for long periods of time, and they're just used in so many different applications, and that leads to a multitude of exposure pathways.
They're called forever chemicals. Is there any way to get rid of them?
There are a ton of researchers that are investigating that very question. There are two approaches being explored. One is to separate PFAS from water. One would argue that is the more pressing concern because of, as you mentioned, now we know there's PFAS present in drinking water supply. So removing PFAS from those drinking water sources is a very high priority. And then the other mode of treatment is destruction. So that is more nascent in kind of conception and application because, as I mentioned, PFAS have properties that are resistant to chemical, thermal, and biological degradation. So it takes a lot of energy and very engineered approaches to help destroy those chemicals in water. But there is hope. There are folks like myself and my research group, we're exploring ways to both separate and destroy PFAS.
What do we know about the dangers that PFAS present, first of all, to people? What kind of health risks?
I did do some digging and investigated some studies that have explored PFAS toxicology to humans. I believe some connections of PFAS exposure in human health have been linked to liver tissue damage, kidney cancer, negative impacts in antibody production and immune systems. If infants are exposed to PFAS during pregnancy, then that can lead to accelerated puberty, low birth weight, and skeletal variations.
And as far as the environment, how can PFAS be destructive for our environment as well?
Because PFAS do tend to stick around, hence the kind of forever chemical name for these class of compounds, they tend to bioaccumulate and translate up the food web. So for example, if PFAS enter a wastewater treatment plant, they're not effectively treated with our existing processes. So when the wastewater is discharged, say to some nearby body of water, then the PFAS will remain in this body of water that's been subjected to that wastewater treatment discharge. And if there are fish, for example, plankton, other species that are exposed to PFAS in the water and ingesting other aquatic species that have ingested and been contaminated with PFAS, then that can result to accumulation up the food web all the way to humans if we consume, for example, seafood that has been exposed to PFAS.
I know that there have been a lot of discussions in the Oregon legislature about trying to do something about them legislatively. Do you think that governments need to step up and get involved, whether it's state, local, or the federal government, to try to outlaw these chemicals?
I would say there are many states already that have placed health advisory levels or maximum contaminant levels for certain PFAS in drinking water supplies, for example. And as recently as April 19th of this year, the Environmental Protection Agency announced that two of the very commonly detected PFAS in the environment will be federally regulated. So thankfully, states have already begun this work of at least setting the kind of maximum contaminant levels. In terms of bans on PFAS production, there are already two PFAS that have been banned from production in the U.S., and because of that, companies and other manufacturers that rely on those particular PFAS for their product and application are switching to other forms of PFAS so that they can still produce their product that is going to perform very similarly to the original product containing the banned PFAS. So I personally believe that we need to begin banning all PFAS to help reduce all the problems that we're now dealing with respect to PFAS exposure and PFAS prevalence in the environment.
What do you think we can do as individuals to protect ourselves from PFAS exposure and reduce the risk?
So there are a couple of options, one of which is to try to buy organic products that some now even say PFAS-free on the bottles or the labels of their products because of, again, how well-known these compounds are and the fact that they are very toxic to humans and to the environment. For example, in the cooking, I mentioned that Teflon is a PFAS coating on cookware. One could switch to either stainless steel or cast iron cookware. And now there are companies that have been developing nonstick coatings on cookware that explicitly state do not contain PFAS. You can buy filters at home that help to treat your drinking water before you ingest it. There are actually a handful of companies that sell versions of Brita or Pure water filters that are specifically designed to help remove PFAS during the filtration process.
Wonderful. Was there anything else you would like to add?
On a brighter note, there are researchers like myself all across the country, all around the world, that are heavily investigating these class of chemicals and really focusing on how we can protect the humans and the environment from exposure to these chemicals. Exploring, for example, green chemistry and ways to synthesize chemicals that perform and behave similarly to PFAS, but will eventually break down in the environment, which we know PFAS don't tend to do. There is hope on the horizon. I don't have a sense of a timeline for when these processes or treatments will be made available or at scale to help address this very widespread and pervasive problem, but there is active work being done in this space.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Jessica Ray with the University of Washington. A boarding school coalition holds listening sessions in Alaska and Minnesota. Tribes sign a Colorado River water sharing deal with four states, and California tribes applaud a Biden order to protect 120,000 acres. With these stories and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
The National Native Boarding School Healing Coalition will be sending teams to Minneapolis this month to collect stories from boarding school survivors. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride reports, they recently spent a week in Anchorage to listen and learn.
About 20 people came to the Alaska Native Heritage Center to share their stories about boarding school abuse, some for the very first time. Denise Lajmadir is one of the oral historians for this project and says survivors ask her why, after all these years, they're ready to talk.
I don't know why I'm telling you. And I said, because we asked.
Lajmadir has heard bits and pieces of Jim LaBelle's story when he served on the Healing Coalition's board. Now she will document his entire story.
His kids and great-grandkids and anyone that wants to know what happened to us at boarding school.
A story about how he was taken away from his family when he was 8 years old and sent to the Wrangell Institute in southeast Alaska, where children were physically and sexually abused. LaBelle first disclosed what happened about 20 years ago, but back then he wasn't always believed.
A lot of people saying, including some of our own Native people saying, that happened a long time ago, get over it.
Indigenous researchers like Benjamin Jasek call boarding school abuse one of America's best-kept secrets.
In order to heal, we need to know what we're healing from.
I'm hoping my story, collectively with all the others that are gathered together, will go way into the future, so that future historians and researchers and policymakers can see the harm that was done.
Jim LaBelle believes that for many Native families, boarding schools are the root cause of intergenerational trauma, homelessness, and Alaska's high rate of missing and murdered Indigenous people. I'm Rhonda McBride.
Six tribes that use water from the Colorado River have signed an agreement with the river's upper basin states. Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico are promising to work together on sharing the shrinking river in the future. KUNC's Alex Hager reports.
Tribal leaders say it's a good step since Indigenous people have long been excluded from talks about managing the river. Avery Tafoya is a council member with the Jicarilla Apache Nation.
It does open the door for all of us to have our voices heard, and I do believe it's going to have an impact.
The new alliance comes amid contentious talks about the future of the Colorado River. More than half of the 30 tribes that use its water have co-signed a letter asking the federal government for better representation going forward. I'm Alex Hager.
California tribes are among those applauding the Biden administration's announcement that President Joe Biden will use his authority under the Antiquities Act to expand the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument and the Berryessa Snow Mountain National Monument in California. The actions will protect nearly 120,000 acres. The Yochadihi Wintun Nation in Northern California has a connection to the Berryessa Snow Mountain, where ceremonies are practiced and where sites were once trading routes. Tribal Chairman Anthony Roberts in a statement thanked the president for the expansion. In Southern California, Fernandinho Tatavian Band of Mission Indians President Rudy Ortega Jr. also thanked Biden for the expansion of the San Gabriel Mountains Monument, saying his people have long cared for the lands. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
This week's Point Puzzle has us thinking about a trip to the movies. For more, we go to Pearl Star from KPOV Bend with the Point Puzzle. This weekly feature challenges listeners with words and logic.
Last week, I asked you to start with a tech company, drop the first and last letters, and insert a T in the middle to get something many people bought last week. The answer is Amazon. Drop the first and last letter, insert the T, and you have Mots. Our winner this week is Lynn Straney, who listens to WUTC in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Da, da, yay, no, da, da, yay, no, da, da, yay, no, da, yay, no, da, yay, no, da, yay, no, da, da, yay, no, da.
For the new puzzle, take a five-letter word and repeat it twice. Insert a filler word in the first copy, and phonetically, you now have a two-word phrase for something you might find at the movies. So again, take a five-letter word and repeat it. Insert a filler word, like in the first copy, and phonetically, you now have a two-word phrase for something you might find at the movies. When you have the answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KPOV Evening News for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Althea Billings, Eric Tegadoff, and Suzanne Potter. The producer